I'm John Aran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for Blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
bathroom? Like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything taken care of.
It took forever, and the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
The exclusive sponsor of our show is the law firm Cundori & Murad. They'll guide you and your family in the right direction, help you draft a will, set up a trust, and create a healthcare power of attorney. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys at kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them that Grant and Danny sent you. You tell them about our show, they will give you a discount. Check them out. They're our buddies, kmlawyers.com. They travel the country to see the local teams play. They are big, big D.C. sports fans, and they're going to take great care of you like they did my parents. Got the Beltway Blitz coming up. We'll talk Wiz with Greg Finberg and Commanders with Nate Davis, but let's get things going right now on the diamond. One of the voices of Nationals baseball is our buddy Dave Jagler. He and Charlie Slows on the call tonight. 6:15 pregame, 6:45 first pitch right here on 106.7 The Fan. Jags, the news of the day, Josiah Gray shut down for the remainder of the season. Partial tear of the UCL, so it sounds like TBD still on Tommy John. But what is the recovery time? Does this go into next year either way?
I would think so, not being a doctor, and I'm going to defer and wait until ultimately the surgery occurs. I mean, if it's Tommy John surgery, we know that much of next season would be lost, knowing that you're at least 12 months out, so you're all-star break next season. The internal brace can be a shorter timeline, but obviously that's to be determined by the doctor when they go in there. But either way, it's a real blow for him personally and for the organization. I mean, this year is obviously a lost year. He only made two starts at the start of the year, and if there's a chunk of next season gone, you're talking about 2 years kind of right in the prime of his pro career that could be impacted. So that's devastating for him personally.
How does it sort of affect, you mentioned it, his career development, Dave? Because this is not a guy with an outrageous amount of pitching experience, sort of picked it up late in his baseball career in terms of the various levels that he played at, is still kind of learning on the job, good enough to make the major leagues and be an all-star last year while still kind of rounding into form as a pitcher. How does it affect that part of the process?
Well, I mean, it's a huge setback. I mean, anytime we saw what it has done to other pitchers in this organization, but the Nationals have a good history of having guys come back from Tommy John surgery, a better version of themselves. So you hope that's the case. I mean, Steven Strasburg went down early in his pro career, came back and had great success here, and ultimately was a World Series MVP. Jordan Zimmermann had success after his Tommy John surgery. So there, it's not a death knell on your career, but it's definitely a setback. I mean, here he is in the prime, figuring he was going to be fronting this rotation as the team's coming back to contention. And obviously this year is gone and potentially somewhat next year. So that's for him personally, you feel bad for him. I mean, just when he was addressing the reporters, he was very emotional and it hasn't sunk in yet. Now he's got to take that energy and focus on the rehab process, focus on getting better and getting back here and being a better version of himself like others have in this organization's past.
Jags, the really good news, I suppose, if there is any, is that Mackenzie Gore and Jake Irvin and Mitchell Parker are all kind of teaming up to have what is still a young foundation for a rotation, even without Gray. And there's more pitching on the way in the system. What is the plan here in terms of the pitching rotation coming out of the All-Star break to try to do what you can to mitigate and get extra rest for some of those young arms?
Yeah, I think what you saw, Grant, is that they pushed the young guys back. I mean, it looked like just kind of that. We focused so much on the bullpen in that stretch going into the All-Star break. It was 17 games in 17 days, and you're focused on, boy, the relievers are working a lot. But these young starters, I mean, most of them have not pitched a whole lot in their career every fifth day, because in the minor leagues, with the built-in one day off a week, you're oftentimes pitching with 6 days rest, and once in a while you pitch with five. So you went three, almost four turns through the rotation without that extra day. And I think you saw the kind of the performance maybe suffer as a result. Jake Irvin had two of his worst starts of the season going into the break. Mitchell Parker had far and away his worst start of the year going into the break. DJ Hurst, they sent down to monitor his innings. So with that in mind, that's why, clearly why Patrick Corbin is starting the first game out of the break. I mean, he's been through this, this so many times, and you're going with Gore in the second game and, Irvin in the third game. And I figure it's going to be after that, Parker in the fourth game, and we'll see with the off day what they do as far as when they bring Hurst back or how long they go without a fifth starter. So hopefully this is a little bit of a reset for Irvin and for Parker in particular. Gore has gone through this last season, so hopefully this break will be good, not just for the bullpen, but definitely for the rotation, because you saw signs just of a little bit of slippage because they were so good over the first 3 months of the season. Now you want them to finish the season in a strong manner and come out of the All-Star break on good footing, just because there'll be some more off days between now and over the next month or so that they can get in that routine and pitch well here the last 2 months of the year.
Jags, what do we want to see next in terms of development, growth, et cetera, from James Wood?
Well, I mean, his first week was outstanding. I mean, he was seeing a lot of pitches, taking his walks, not striking out much, hitting the ball a ton. I think in the second week, just on that road trip, he was really caught in between whether pitchers were kind of they're throwing junk at him early in the count, and he was kind of sitting on junk, and then they were busting him with fastballs in kind of breaking ball counts with two strikes. So just that adjustment of kind of sitting on the fastball, hunting that pitch that you can drive, because we know when he finds his pitch to hit, he's going to hit it hard somewhere. So I think he just kind of got it caught a little bit in between. Maybe the pitcher's getting in his head a little bit. So hopefully this little mental break for him will be a nice reset, because clearly I think the swing decisions are good for the most part. He's not chasing a lot of bad pitches, and a few times he's been called out on strikes on pitches that clearly weren't strikes. So I think they're happy with what his strike zone decision is, but in a way, maybe try to be a little more aggressive. I felt like because he was maybe waiting for the perfect pitch, he let some decent pitches go by. So it kind of works backwards, like you were saying. They were throwing him soft stuff early, heaters late. He's got to make that adjustment, and just whenever that fastball comes, be ready to do damage on it.
And the quality of at bat for him has been excellent, arguably the best on the team since he got called up.
I think so. I think I'm even though he didn't hit a ton that last week, it's not like he was swinging at a bunch of pitches way out of the strike zone. I think he stayed at his approach, but in a way, maybe he was almost too patient. So we'll see if that's an adjustment he has to make.
Jags, have you worked on any Carly Rae Jepsen lyrics for your calls? Working in maybe a Call Me Maybe with the concert tonight, or Run Away With Me after a stolen base, something like that?
Well, I'm glad that you just provided that, because that was not really up my alley, but now I know. So now I know what to do.
But cut to the feeling.
That's what our rehearsal's for. We rehearse all our ad libs. You know that.
Exactly. Cut on and miss could be Cut to the Feeling. That's from the Side B 2016 album.
It sounds like you're angling to do an inning tonight. You're bringing the A game here. I like it.
I'm on Google Carly Rae Jepsen songs.
I learned a lot about Carly Rae Jepsen just now, Dave.
I know about Call Me Maybe.
As did I.
That's the one. Enjoy the concert tonight and also the game.
And maybe not in that order.
Exactly. All right, Jags, be good.
See ya.
There's our buddy Dave Jagler on Grant and Danny. Let's keep it moving. Greg Finberg, love his X account. You can check him out, breaking down the Wizards. Greg, why don't we start with Bub Carrington, who has been a revelation. What an awesome first week or so in the summer league he has had. Seems like he's now on the short list, Greg, for everybody's rankings of the best players in the summer league so far.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Bob Carrington had lofty expectations considering, the Wizards traded Danny Avdia to get him. So they had, a niche that he was going to be, a really good player, and he's proven them right. The fit looks great right now. I mean, this is a kid who's only 18 years old. He turns 20 or 19 in about 2 days. So player, a lot of upside. First game against the Hawks, almost dropped a triple-double, 19 points, 9 rebounds, 8 assists. They played him on guard. They played him off of the ball. So he can play point guard. He can play shooting guard. he can pretty much play anywhere you need him on the perimeter. So the scoring there, he's shown great court vision. Another thing that's kind of gone under the radar, he's pretty much picking up full court. The defense has been better than advertised, I should say. So, you know, in terms of above Carrington, he's exceeded all expectations so far.
Alex Saar, obviously the 0-for game has gotten a lot of headlines and a lot of, like, you know, hot takes, CBS Sports Minutes and various things, people noticing it. I still not alarmed. I mean, that's a, you know, an offensive guy in progress in terms of an 18-year-old player. I saw a lot of athleticism, good defense, and a lot of positive things even in that. How did he bounce back here in his game after the 0-for? What's your assessment?
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking for a bounce back in terms of scoring, you're not going to get that. I mean, he had 2 points, so obviously anything's better than going 0-15 and 0 points. You can't really get worse than that, but his calling guard has always been on the defensive end. I mean, Wizards GM Will Dawkins came out after the draft and pretty much said, we drafted Alex Saar because of his defense. We didn't draft him to, you know, drop 25 points a game. A lot of Wizards fans, you know, Alex Saar is the highest pick since Otto Porter Jr., you know, a long time ago. So lofty expectations coming in. A lot of Wizards fans wanted him to look like prime Anthony Davis right away. He's still only 19. He's never really been touted as an offensive guy. So, you know, it's alarming, I should say, obviously, to go 0-15 and then follow that up by a 1-of-6 performance, 2 points on 1-of-21 shooting in your last two games. But I'm not too concerned because the defense is still there. He's still blocking shots and altering pretty much everything around the rim, making, you know, life pretty difficult for opposing guards. So that's there. The rebounding has been solid. You know, his passing hasn't been too bad on offense. So every other aspect of his game has been there, has been as advertised. And quite frankly, the offense has been as advertised too. No one thought he would be a great offensive player right away, and yet the Wizards still took him at number two. So it's a work in progress. He's not going to come out and light the world on fire offensively. But again, I'm not too concerned considering that the defense, the rebounding, the passing, that's still all there for Alex Saar.
Greg Finberg, Bullets Forever, is where you can read some of his work. To double-click on that last point, because that's actually where I wanted to go. The defense has been excellent. That's great. Everything he's done pretty much has been good other than shooting the ball and scoring. And I know the expectations were low, but even by that standard, has it been disappointing to you? I think he's 1-for-20-something his last couple games. Like, does he look further away or like more of a project than you expected offensively?
It's a good question. I think for if you watched film on him pre-draft, you saw the glaring holes in his game. I mean, the shooting is one thing, you know, an inefficient shot at that, but he doesn't have much in his offensive game to begin with. You know, there's been struggles apart from scoring, just like catching the ball in the post or off passes. When he sets screens, he seems to be rolling too soon. Like, these are all pretty elementary things that he's got to work on and get better at. You know, that being said, even when I came in expecting him to be a poor offensive player, he's been worse than I thought. And I think it's probably because he's pressing. He's trying to do way too much. He's not letting the game come to him. You know, and when you do that, you shoot 0-of-15 and you shoot 0-of-5 from three and all that kind of culminated. That was pretty much as bad a performance against Portland as you could get, 0-of-15 shooting. So yes, while I didn't expect him to be a great offensive player, it's been a little worse. But again, he's only 19. It's going to take a while. So, you know, I'm not pressing the panic button just yet. I don't think Wizards fans should. It's definitely a cause for concern, but again, it's not the end of the world considering he's done everything else that he's expected to do other than scoring.
Back to Carrington, early on this year and then maybe as the year progresses, it's always so hard to read summer league stats and performances, Greg. I mean, you've covered this league a while now. What do you think his role is going to be initially versus how will it grow as the year progresses?
I think Wizards fans are going to be frustrated to start the season when they see Malcolm Brogdon starting at shooting guard alongside Jordan Poole and Bob Carrington coming off the bench, because I pretty much bet that that's going to be the case as they try to build Malcolm Brogdon's trade value. Obviously, Poole's making $30 million. He's probably going to start at point guard. But I think Bob Carrington's role is off the bench as a scorer. And it depends. If the Wizards play him on ball, then, you know, he can come off the bench as a point guard and you know, kind of display that court vision. And if they play him off ball, he can show his scoring prowess. I mean, very efficient in the mid-range. He shot 44% through the first three summer league games from three. So this is a guy that can score, can also pass, has many hats that he can wear. So I think that's his role as kind of a bench kind of player to start. And I think he's the point guard of the future for this team. But at this moment, I think his role is probably more suited off the bench, considering they'll try to build Brogdon and his trade value.
At Greg, G-R-E-G, Finberg, F-I-N-B-E-R-G on Twitter. Thanks for the time, buddy, as always.
Yeah, thank you guys so much.
You got it. Good content there. Let's keep the blitz moving. And get the latest on football and the Commanders with Nate Davis of USA Today. Nate, I want to start locally here. We found out yesterday Jason Wright out as team president. Search begins immediately to find his successor. He is going to stay on this football season as a senior advisor. Surprised at all with the timing of this as we close it on camp this week?
I don't know what the optimal timing would have been, Grant. And welcome back, by the way. I spent Monday quoting Danny Ruggie. Back to Danny Ruggie.
Yeah, it was tough. Nate got me too, by the way. I totally forgot about something, and he called me right out on it. I had no answer. I had no response. I was flattened.
That's great.
Jason's pending departure. I mean, I don't know the ideal times to announce that. I mean, I think most of his endeavors were on the business side, so I don't think the football team will be especially affected by this. He had some misadventures, I'd say, in his time here, but I mean, also he was not in the most favorable situation for a good chunk of that time, but wish them well. We'll see what they do next in that position, but definitely kind of signals a near complete turnover, just kind of in the Josh Harris area here.
Nate, read your piece about why the Niners would be crazy to trade Brandon Ayuk. Tell people what those reasons would be, why they'd be nuts to do it. I'm with you.
Yeah, primarily, we talk about teams being in a Super Bowl window, and we know the Niners are a perennial contender, but I mean, this is the window. This is the last year they're going to have Brock Purdy on the NFL version of welfare for a quarterback, and next year they're going to have to pay him, and that's going to mean that other guys are going to have to go. They're as loaded as they're going to be this year with Brandon Ayuk, who became Brock Purdy's number one target last year. I mean, the crux of the argument is why would you get rid of a guy? And certainly at this point, presumably for draft assets, it wouldn't do you any good until 14 months from now. So it just doesn't make sense. So the Niners have leverage here. I think I said it before. I mean, I find it more likely that they'll figure out something with Brandon Ayuk either in the near term or next year. And then I think probably the more likely candidate to go, based on how this offense worked last year, we would be Debo Samuel and maybe another guy or two.
Nate, are you watching off-season Hard Knocks with the Giants on HBO?
Yes.
So two things on that. I guess first I just want to know what you think about the format, because I think this is the best version of Hard Knocks for me personally. But then second, I can't believe how rudimentary some of the questions Brian Daboll has asked are. And I want to know if every coach is like that, do you think? I mean, he's asking things like, before the day they're trying to trade for Burns, they've been working on this for weeks and weeks and weeks. He's the head coach. They're counseling him. He's like, what's his sack production like? I mean, first of all, sack production is like the 11th best way to tell if an edge is awesome or not. So that is dumb in and of itself. But I just can't believe that's the question an hour before they're trying to trade for him. And then there's just other things along the way that he's asking about guys. It just seems to me like I like Brian Daboll, but I've been really surprised by him.
Yeah, Grant, I think this kind of shows you to some degree, and I've enjoyed it too. I mean, it's actually kind of ironic to me that the Giants kind of avoided, this Hard Knocks thing throughout their existence, and then they sign up for what may be like the most invasive and revealing, version of all of them. I think it kind of shows how things can be siloed. Knowing Brian Burns' production isn't Brian Daboll's lane. I mean, certainly, I could see where you might think he'd bone up on it a little bit.
He doesn't have Google.
I got Pro Football Reference up right now.
I mean, it's not like he's preparing for the Eagles this week, I mean, and it's weeks and weeks of, like, they were at the Senior Bowl talking about it, and I can't think of exactly, but it's like 6 weeks later that they're now. And he's like, so what's his sack production?
Is he good at football, you guys?
I don't know, man. I know that here when Marty and Ron just sat around, it was just a bunch of dudes from Section 417 running a football team. But is that the case everywhere?
Well, I mean, Shane and Morgan were talking about it at the Senior Bowl. But, I mean, to me, Brian Daboll came out very impressive. with the question and answer portion, you know, in that tight window they had at the combine.
I love that. Yes.
When they were running the prospects through. And I mean, I think that's his deal, is the X's and O's. And I mean, you know, I'm sure he knows who Brian Burns is. I mean, does he know his production off the top of his head? Again, I'm not sure that's issue number one for him. He just got a new defensive coordinator. You know, I think I've been more struck by feeling, and again, you know, obviously, you know, we're seeing the snippets that NFL Films and the Giants are kind of letting out there. And, you know, who knows what the broader context is of some of these discussions. But it does feel like, too, that, you know, you know, the three of us should get a football team and run it. Cause, yeah,
exactly. I mean, you mentioned the coordinator, Nate. Like, that's another one. And now I sound like I'm beating up on him. But he comes up in the first episode to Joe Shane. He's like, I made my decision. We're going to hire, I don't even remember the guy's name, whoever the former Titans coordinator was. And he's like, oh, okay. He's like, this guy's the real deal. He's like, they were 10th in yards against them in the run. And he, like, used the most, like, the stats that I would look up when I was 15. He's like, he's 10th against the run. I looked it up. He's not even going per play. He's going per game. Like, I mean, just dumb stuff.
You know? Amazing.
I'm like, these are the analytics of football, the Ron Rivera style that he's using to hire his coordinator? I don't know, man. It was just...
The thing that's really struck me is just kind of like, you know, I don't mean this in an insulting way, but I mean, it almost seems like John Mara is like this 12-year-old kid who wants Saquon Barkley for Christmas. And Joe Shane's just, no, you know. Yeah, maybe. We'll see. I'll let you know.
You'll see how it goes. You got to save you from yourself there, sir.
Exactly. He tells him a bunch. He's like, he's our most popular player. And Joe Shane's like, yeah.
Sure is, yeah.
We get it.
I'll have a heart attack if he goes to Philadelphia. Yeah. Spoiler.
It's so good, though. So, so good. Check out Nate. You should be following him already and following all his content. Does a great job covering the National Football League for USA Today. He's at By Nate Davis on Twitter. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks,
good having you on, as always.
All right, guys. Thanks.
All right. Be good. There you go. Your Beltway Blitz on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Next, Caleb, Jaden, who's going to have the bigger first season in the NFL, Williams or Daniels? This is The Fan.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
I'm John Oran.
And I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
With Danny, I'm Grant. This is The Fan. Welcome back, and thanks for making the show part of your day. The Nationals have agreed to terms, reportedly, with their first-round pick, Siver King, the number 10 overall pick in the draft this past weekend. Siver King out of Wake Forest, the Demon Deacons, third baseman. Nats are going to start him out at shortstop in the minor leagues. So that was quick. They got this done. They'll get him into the minors and start working him through the system, which is ideal because it means he'll be able to play enough this year to maybe start it, you know, one of the upper levels, whether it's A+, AA, something like that, sometime early next year if they want to move him along. Not surprising, though, when you go college, not a lot of leverage for him.
Right.
It was under slot, and they got the contract done quickly, which is one of the great benefits to drafting as many college players as they did.
Yes.
They have a pretty new drafting department, amateur scouting, they call it, player development on one side, and then your scouting department. Well, the amateur guys have worked in a bunch of places, but recently Baltimore has done a great job drafting, and they kind of implemented a heavy college bat philosophy, it seems like.
So there was a small piece I read on Mass, and I think it was our guy Bobby Blanco that wrote it, but a local kid, I think he went in the 9th or 10th, maybe 11th round, went to UMBC, was a pitcher, and he's a graduating senior. So instead of giving him what's the average for that position, it's almost $200,000 in a signing bonus, they, you know, I feel bad, but they're within their rights to do this because that's the way the rules are. I think they only gave the guy a couple grand to sign. So it doesn't seem like much, but you do that a few different times. You got yourself an extra $1 million to play with to take somebody and pay them over slot. Someone you think is going to go to college, for example. You go, college sounds nice. What about an extra $1 million to come sign and play for us? What about that? And so that's kind of the way this gets manipulated.
And I always see people that get so upset or talk about, oh, that's no money. That this sounds weird. It's really not weird. The teams talk to the agents beforehand. They are on the clock and they go, hey, we're spending a couple thousand at this pick. Do you want to be the pick and play pro ball for a couple $1,000s and go start your career? Or are you going to college? Or are you going back to school? And the player has the right, I'm sure, in that situation. Now, if you draft a guy without making that call or seeing if he's going to sign for that, that doesn't feel as good. But I think typically speaking, you're on the phone with agents, you're working those relationships and figuring out what's a guy looking for, what does he want. But yeah, you save some money and you're able to use it in other places in the draft to get players who fell. I'll give you an example. Last year, the Nationals took Travis Sikora, who's a high school right-handed pitcher, was a 19-year-old, 6'6" kid, who might be a little taller than that now, based on the last time I saw him in person. But he's at Single-A Fredericksburg, pitching for the Fred Nats right now. He's been one of the best pitchers in the minor leagues this year. He's got a 2.7 ERA. He's got 63 Ks in 45 innings and a sub-1 whip. This guy throws 100 miles an hour, upper 90s, like legit prospect. He might have been the best pitcher in America last year in high school. He did not go in the top 70 because a lot of people thought he was going to go to college. He had a commitment to Texas. He was the 71st overall pick. But the Nats kind of called his bluff, hit him up at 71 and said, hey, we've got this much money to offer you because we're saving some money and giving some other people some haircuts. Would you sign for that? And then lo and behold, they got the guy done.
That's right.
And now I think he's vastly underrated and is the best pitching prospect in their system. And if I was doing a prospect ranking, I'd have him right near the top of all of their prospects, even if you don't see that at some of the publications that do that. So that's kind of the idea, is you try to go under slot where you can, where guys don't have the leverage, and then you use the money left over to go reel in a big fish. Because for those of you that don't understand the baseball draft, it's essentially like being given an allowance. So you're given $10 to spend on your 20 rounds, so to speak. You can spend it however you want. If your first overall pick takes $7 of your dollars, you got $3 left to use on your other 19 picks. That's the way it works. And then each pick is valued at a slot that what you're supposed to spend. You don't have to go that high, or that you could go lower, above it, whatever. But at least the player knows, okay, at this pick, as you said earlier, I'm supposed to get, of your $10, $3.50. Well, if the Nats offer you $1.17 and you take it, they just saved between that and $3.50.
A couple bucks, yeah.
To go use elsewhere with their allowance. And that's kind of how the whole system works.
And so, for some folks that, again, I would have been on the other side of this, right? As somebody that was a senior, they had offered me, if they actually, teams had wanted me, $100 or something, like some nominal fee to sign, because my alternative is either go play independent ball in Butte, Montana, or, you know, go get an internship somewhere and you know, that's it. I got no other places to go or what to do. So, you know, it's the kind of thing where it probably doesn't feel great and look great in individual cases, but this is the current system. I think the system is flawed, just for the record. But the way that it's done, this is maneuvering within that system, and you can play with it a little bit. You can be smart. The Orioles have done it, I know. A couple different teams have kind of said, we're going to take a guy, you know, overdraft him, knowing we don't have to pay him as much in order to have some more room elsewhere. And it's one of these things that's, it's not just who's the best player, he'll now get, you know, 94% of the guy that just went ahead of him's salary, like they do in the NFL or the NBA, et cetera. It's a more complicated system, and the Nats are using it very well. It's smart business.
Seaver King, who they drafted in the first round, taking BP over at Nats Park right now, hitting some tanks. Bobby Blanco of Masson Sports saying he just went into the brewhouse seats out, those red seats in left center. So he's got the power. The big question is going to be swing decisions, chase rate, some of that stuff, kind of getting him to swing at the right pitches in the zone. There's going to need to be some tweaks, but he was at Division II a year ago, transferred
pretty
to
Wake Forest rise, huh?
In the portal, and then went in the top 10. Pretty amazing story. All right, let's get to the top of the quarterback board. Speaking of draft picks, numbers 1 and 2. Caleb Williams, who went 1 to the Bears, and Jaden Daniels, who came to the nation's capital with the Commanders' number 2 overall pick. This is what Booger McFarland had to say on ESPN yesterday.
Don't be surprised if midway through the season, we're having a conversation very similar to what we had last year, meaning the number 2 pick, Jaden Daniels, looks better than the number 1 pick, Caleb Williams. Just like we had last year with C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young, because there are a lot of people out of Washington telling me that this young man, Jaden Daniels, not only does he look the part, his teammates know he looked the part. And I think Caleb Williams is going to struggle, and I think Jaden Daniels is going to come out the gate flying. And we're going to have this conversation, Greeny. Mark it down, July the 16th, whatever it is, it's 100 degrees. Did the Chicago Bears make the right pick? We're going to have this conversation again.
I want to get into this next, and I want to open up the phones with you guys on the MGM National Harbor listener lines at 800-636-1067. Do you agree with the idea that Jaden Daniels is going to have a better rookie season than Caleb Williams? And if hypothetically you think that's possible, or you do, how does he get there? And maybe you don't, because I don't necessarily. I think Caleb Williams has the best situation for a kid quarterback in league history in year one, with supporting cast, defense, running game, receiving room, all of those things. And it's going to help him hit the ground sprinting. But let's get into how Jaden Daniels could outperform him as a rookie, how we could get to that outcome that Booger McFarland of ESPN is projecting. Phones are open, 800-636-1067. We're Grant and Danny on the Fan. Yesterday on ESPN, Booger McFarland claimed Jaden Daniels will have a better rookie year than Caleb Williams. Do you agree? 800-636-1067. Why or why not? We'll tackle this in a moment. Let's start with Dave, who's in Largo, Maryland on G&D. What's up, Dave? How are you?
G&D, what up, though?
Hey, buddy.
How are you, pal?
What's up, fellas? Happy Friday. Hey, I don't know if I could agree with Booger like that, man, just because we have our offensive line, okay? So let's start with the offensive line. With the offensive line, yes, we addressed the interior part of the offensive line, but we did not address the major position on that offensive line as the left tackle for that right-hand quarterback. So Cornelius Lucas, are we like going to put all our faith in Cornelius Lucas? And then look at the weapons we still have. Yeah, we surrounded, you know, we got Ackler, and I like the Benson and that guy, and, you know, the other additions they added. But, bro, our wide receiver room is not all of that. Like, Terry, we know what we're going to get with Terry at the number one, because with the display of quarterbacks we had over the past several years, now he finally got somebody throwing to him. So now we know we're going to get with Terry. But Jahan Dotson, bro, I hope you're listening right now to Grant and Danny. Listen, this is a make or break year for you, Jahan. Like, if you don't give us the production that we need, bro, you got to go. And I don't know why people, like the youngest guy in charge, Linnell Willingham, thinks we shouldn't go get Brandon Ayuk. Like, bro, bring in all the extra weapons we can bring in, bring in the extra talent. So to answer y'all question, I don't think we have set this guy up perfectly for him to have a better season than Caleb Williams. We're going to have a better season overall as Commanders, the fans, and a team, yes. But Jalen over Caleb, I don't know. I just think they surrounded Caleb much better in Chicago than we did here in Washington.
Well, they definitely did that, Dave.
Appreciate you, dude. Thank you.
I mean, look, in fairness, if you're comparing what Washington did to what the Bears did, they did a better job surrounding him than I think any team has ever done ever. I really legitimately
Yeah, they set the new benchmark.
He has been surrounded with more than a rookie debut in neophyte QB in league history has never seen what he's seeing. So, yes, they have not done as much as the Bears. By the way, big day, I think, for Linnell. I don't know that he's been name-checked on this show before. This is the Linnell name-check bell. We've had some other shows mentioned.
Yes.
I don't know that anyone's ever dropped Linnell's name. Well, like taking issue with, that's like a badge of honor. It's like getting your first piece of hate mail or something.
Yeah, I remember the first time it happened to me. Not even kidding you. Doing overtime.
Like, who's this when I first Danny started. Rouye guy?
Yeah, I remember like it was like Wise and Kushner the next day. Some caller like was they're like, we didn't hear that. We were living our lives. Like, we didn't listen to this dude after the Nats game at 10:45 last night. But the guy was like arguing with me through them. I was like, I have arrived. That's a big deal.
Attaboy, Linnell.
Good job, dude.
It's a nice step for you in the right direction there. But kidding aside, going back to the larger point, I do think that he made an interesting observation. He said, they made moves I like. True. Mm-hmm. They got some good players. They didn't get a special player. The Giants go out, and this is Daniel Jones' make-or-break season. Here's Malik Nabers, right? When the Eagles didn't know what they had in Jalen Hurts, and they were hopeful. They already had Devontae Smith, who they drafted, and they trade for A.J. Brown. Like, we got good. We're going and getting great. We're going to be spectacular. We're going to be special. The lists that are all coming out ranking skill positions have Washington, for what it's worth, somewhere between the bottom four to the bottom eight teams in the NFL.
This is my point.
They are fine. I think their receiving room has a chance to be better than expected if Jahan Dotson, who we just spoke directly to, who is absolutely listening right now. Hello, Jahan. We know
Hi, buddy.
You're a big fan of the program, and we're a big fan of yours. But he's got to have a big year. They've certainly need help for Terry McLaurin on the outside. Let's go to Matt and Stafford on G&D. Do you think Jaden Daniels can outperform Caleb Williams this season?
Yeah, I do. And it's interesting. It's kind of funny when you think about 12 years ago and you looked at Andrew Luck and Robert Griffin. Andrew Luck being the one that had more of a pedigree and more statistical production in college compared to Robert Griffin that was very, very exciting. And I remember thinking at the time, I would want Robert Griffin. And a lot of people thought it was 1 and 1A. And I believe that this year you're going to see more exciting plays from Jaden. And he'll lead them to like a division title and win Rookie of the Year. It'll just be a matter of keeping them healthy, and I kind of expect something like Kyler's rookie year. I would say maybe 700 yards rushing and 3,500 yards passing, and that would probably be the recipe.
Yeah, that's exactly the recipe, and that was kind of part B of the question we were going to get into here. Jeeps is. I don't know that you're going to be as prolific as Williams with those weapons in terms of throwing the football.
He's
right?
going to outthrow you.
I think Williams is a great thrower of the football. I mean, that's why I would have drafted him first. He's been the number one pick for 2 years, basically, because of that. Does some things that only a handful of guys on this planet really do. Those off-angle throws, those sort of magical creation moments, which to me is the separator in the league. I think he's going to be really good. You give him some weapons, some safety valves, some deep threats, everything in between. But for Daniels to outperform him or shine him, it's going to be some of those highlight runs, right? I mean, Williams is athletic, but not like Jaden Daniels. I mean, that's a different stratosphere. Williams is a guy that uses athleticism maybe to get a pass off after an extra beat, can scramble a little bit, but Daniels could run if they so desired. I hope they don't, by the way. I want some running, not 800 yards worth, but if you wanted to, you could have him run for 800 yards this year. If that was like an integral part of your offense and it was featured, you could have him run a lot more than we're used to seeing. And that Cam Newton, Griffin kind of territory, if that was on paper. But some highlight real plays in that regard, that's the path to winning it.
Yeah, and this is why I think he does have a chance. It's what they will do, hopefully. It's what I would do. It would be ludicrous to draft Jaden Daniels and then not have him running a lot, not have that built in as part of your offense. If you took the running out of the equation, he wouldn't have been the number 2 overall pick. In fact, if you took the running out of the equation, he wouldn't have gone. I mean, maybe he still goes in the the middle of the first round or something, but the electricity with his feet, the ability to create and extend, the ability to make plays and run away from people and crush souls with his legs, part of the package, a big part of the package. It's the cape. That's what makes him Superman. Let's go to JB in Waldorf. What's up, JB?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? What's going on, man?
Hey, man.
I kind of do side with Booger on this one, saying that Daniels is going to end up being a better quarterback. Not because I'm a skin Commanders fan or whatever the case may be, but I just think it's going to be all about the attitude when they win or lose. And I know you guys don't like to judge quarterbacks by win or losing. I'm not judging them by win or losing, but it seems like Caleb Williams, when he loses, like, he has an attitude of it's all over.
That's exactly
like,
right.
He just wants to sulk and cry all the time. And I don't think that's going to go across well with, you know, players who've been in the NFL for five, six, or 10 years that have been doing this, you know, that understand winning and losing. And he's on the team with guys like Keenan Allen. They've got other players that came. I just don't think that they're going to settle for him soaking in, you know, and doing that. And I think with Daniels, giving him – having him just have not too many receivers, like not too much to have to do, just like Stroud last year. They kept it simple for him, and he had more success. I think that's the best way for Daniels, and I think he'll end up being the better quarterback.
Appreciate you, buddy. I think that there's no doubt that Caleb Williams has to grow up really fast. He's going to have to mature. He handled losing and negativity or adversity poorly last year. I don't think anybody would refute that, at least from what we saw publicly. But that doesn't mean that's what he's always going to be or that's what he'll be this year. Now, maybe that changes and people have gotten in his ear, and maybe whether it's Keenan Allen or some of the veterans you mentioned in that locker room, maybe they help him right away. But I don't expect to see him, you know, crying in the stands with his parents after a loss this season or refusing to speak to the media. Like, you can't really do that at this level without it affecting you pretty negatively quickly. We saw Cam Newton and some other guys learn that the hard way during their careers. I appreciate the phone call. Do you see a path for Jaden Daniels outperforming Caleb Williams in his first season? We're going to give our answers on that next, and then we can get into where our confidence in Daniels comes from for his rookie year, as rookies have reported to Ashburn yesterday with Grant and Danny. Yesterday on ESPN, Booger McFarland claimed Jaden Daniels will have a better rookie year than Caleb Williams. Do you agree? 800-636-1067, why or why not? We'll tackle this in a moment. Let's start with Dave, who's in Largo, Maryland on G&D. What's up, Dave? How are you?
Hey, Dave. G&D, what up, though?
Hey, buddy.
How are you, pal?
What's up, fellas? Happy Friday. Hey, I don't know if I could agree with Booger like that, man, just because we have our offensive line, okay? So let's start with the offensive line. With the offensive line, yes, we addressed the interior part of the offensive line, but we did not address the major position on that offensive line as the left tackle for that right-hand quarterback. So Cornelius Lucas, are we like going to put all our faith in Cornelius Lucas? And then look at the weapons we still have. Yeah, we surrounded, you know, we got Ackler, and I like the this and that guy, and, you know, the other additions they added. But, bro, our wide receiver room is not all of that. Like, Terry, we know what we're going to get with Terry at the number one, because with the display of quarterbacks we had over the past several years, now he finally got somebody throwing to him. So now we know what we're going to get with Terry. But Jahan Dotson, bro, I hope you're listening right now to Grant and Danny. Listen, this is a make-or-break year for you, Jahan. Like, if you don't give us the production that we need, bro, you got to go. And I don't know why people, like the youngest guy in charge, Linnell Willingham, thinks we shouldn't go get Brandon Ayuk. Like, bro, bring in all the extra weapons we can bring in the extra talent. So to answer y'all question, I don't think we have set this guy up perfectly for him to have a better season than Caleb Williams. We're going to have a better season overall as Commanders, the fans, and a team, yes. But Jalen over Caleb, I don't know. I just think they surrounded Caleb much better in Chicago than we did here in Washington.
Well, they definitely did that, Dave.
I appreciate you, dude. Thank you.
I mean, look, in fairness, if you're comparing what Washington did to what the Bears did, they did a better job surrounding him than I think any team has ever done ever. I really legitimately
Yeah, they set
believe.
The new benchmark.
He has been surrounded with more than a rookie debut in neophyte QB in league history has never seen what he's seeing. So, yes, they have not done as much as the Bears. By the way, big day, I think, for Linnell. I don't know that he's been name-checked on this show before. This is the Linnell name-check bell. We've had some other shows mentioned.
Yes.
I don't know that anyone's ever dropped Linnell's name. Well, like taking issue with, that's like a badge of honor. It's like getting your first piece of hate mail or something.
Yeah. I remember the first time it happened to me, not even kidding you. Doing overtime.
Like, who's when this I first Danny started. Rouye guy?
Yeah, I remember like it was like Wise and Kushner the next day. Some caller like was they're like, we didn't hear that. We were living our lives. Like, we didn't listen to this dude after the Nets game at 10:45 last night. But the guy was like arguing with me through them. I was like, I have arrived. That's a big deal.
Attaboy, Linnell.
Good job, dude.
It's a nice step for you in the right direction there. But kidding aside, going back to the larger point, I do think that he made an interesting observation. He said, they made moves I like. True. Mm-hmm. They got some good players. They didn't get a special player. The Giants go out, and this is Daniel Jones's make-or-break season. Here's Malik Nabers, right? When the Eagles didn't know what they had in Jalen Hurts, and they were hopeful. They already had Devontae Smith, who they drafted, and they trade for A.J. Brown. Like, we got good. We're going and getting great. We're going to be spectacular. We're going to be special. The lists that are all coming out ranking skill positions have Washington, for what it's worth, somewhere between the bottom four to the bottom eight teams in the NFL.
This is my point.
They are fine. I think their receiving room has a chance to be better than expected if Jahan Dotson, who we just spoke directly to, who is absolutely listening right now. Hello, Jahan. We know.
Hi, buddy.
You're a big fan of the program, and we're a big fan of yours. But he's got to have a big year. They've certainly need help for Terry McLaurin on the outside. Let's go to Matt and Stafford on G&D. Do you think Jaden Daniels can outperform Caleb Williams this season?
Yeah, I do. And it's interesting. It's kind of funny when you think about 12 years ago and you looked at Andrew Luck and Robert Griffin. Andrew Luck being the one that had more of a pedigree and more statistical production in college compared to Robert Griffin that was very, very exciting. And I remember thinking at the time, I would want Robert Griffin. And a lot of people thought it was 1 and 1A. And I believe that this year you're going to see more exciting plays from Jaden. And he'll lead them to like a division title and win Rookie of the Year. It'll just be a matter of keeping them healthy. I kind of expect something like Kyler's rookie year. I would say maybe 700 yards rushing and 3,500 yards passing, and that would probably be the recipe.
Yeah, that's exactly the recipe. And that was kind of part B of the question we were going to get into here, Jeeps, is – I don't know that you're going to be as prolific as Williams with those weapons in terms of throwing the football.
He's going to out-throw you.
I think Williams is a great thrower of the football. I mean, that's why I would have drafted him first. He's been the number one pick for 2 years, basically, because of that. Does some things that only a handful of guys on this planet really do. Those off-angle throws, those sort of magical creation moments, which to me is the separator in the league. I think he's going to be really good. You give him some weapons, some safety valves, some deep threats, everything in between. But for Daniels to outperform him or shine him, it's going to be some of those highlight runs, right? I mean, Williams is athletic, but not like Jaden Daniels. I mean, that's a different stratosphere. Williams is a guy that uses athleticism maybe to get a pass off after an extra beat, can scramble a little bit, but Daniels could run if they so desired. I hope they don't, by the way. I want some running, not 800 yards worth, but if you wanted to, you could have him run for 800 yards this year. If that was like an integral part of your offense and it was featured, you could have him run a lot more than we're used to seeing. And that Cam Newton, Griffin kind of territory, if that was on paper. But some highlight real plays in that regard, that's the path to winning it.
Yeah, and this is why I think he does have a chance. It's what they will do, hopefully. It's what I would do. It would be ludicrous to draft Jaden Daniels and then not have him running a lot, not have that built in as part of your offense. If you took the running out of the equation, he wouldn't have been the number two overall pick. In fact, if you took the running out of the equation, he wouldn't have gone. I mean, maybe he still goes in the middle of the first round or something, but the electricity with his feet, the ability to create and extend, the ability to make plays and run away from people and crush souls with his legs, part of the package, a big part of the package. It's the cape. That's what makes him Superman. Let's go to JB in Waldorf. What's up, JB?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? What's going on, man?
Hey, man.
I kind of do side with Booger on this one, saying that Daniels is going to end up being a better quarterback. Not because I'm a skin Commanders fan or whatever the case may be, but I just think it's going to be all about the attitude when they win or lose. And I know you guys don't like to judge quarterbacks by win or losing. I'm not judging them by win or losing, but it seems like Caleb Williams, when he loses, like he has an attitude of it's all over.
That's exactly
like,
right. Yeah.
He just wants to sulk and cry all the time. And I don't think that's going to go across well with, you know, players who've been in the NFL for five, six, or 10 years that have been doing this, you know, that understand winning and losing. And he's on the team with guys like Keenan Allen. They've got other players that came. I just don't think that they're going to settle for him soaking in, you know, and doing that. And I think with Daniels, giving him – having him just have not too many receivers, like not too much to have to do, just like Stroud last year. They kept it simple for him, and he had more success. I think that's the best way for Daniels, and I think he'll end up being the better quarterback.
Appreciate you, buddy. I think that there's no doubt that Caleb Williams has to grow up really fast. He's going to have to mature. He handled losing and negativity or adversity poorly last year. I don't think anybody would refute that, at least from what we saw publicly. But that doesn't mean that's what he's always going to be or that's what he'll be this year. You know, maybe that changes and people have gotten in his ear. And maybe whether it's Keenan Allen or some of the veterans you mentioned in that locker room, maybe they help him right away. But I don't expect to see him, you know, crying in the stands with his parents after a loss this season or refusing to speak to the media. Like you can't really do that at this level without it affecting you pretty negatively quickly. We saw Cam Newton and some other guys learn that the hard way during their careers. I appreciate the phone call. Do you see a path for Jaden Daniels outperforming Caleb Williams in his first season? We're going to give our answers on that next, and then we can get into where our confidence in Daniels comes from for his rookie year, as rookies have reported to Ashburn yesterday with Grant and Danny.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
bathroom?
I feel
like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything taken
care of. It took forever. And the worst part? Hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.